Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. This is Ashwini and I'm filling in for Jen. And I'm joined today by Sridevi, who has been stewarding our Bridge Walk campaigns for the last couple of years. And we are here to talk about the 2015 Bridge Walk campaign. Welcome, Sridevi.
Hi, Ashwini.
Hey. So perhaps, Sridevi, we could start off by announcing the theme of the year.
Yes. And I'm so excited to be a part of this campaign and can't wait for everyone in Sangha to hopefully get just as excited to participate. And the theme is called the High Five Challenge. And what's really exciting about it is what we are doing, of course, in the spirit of the focus of this year, training to live in this here now, is asking Sangha to commit to five things that support their practice daily, starting today, or possibly tomorrow morning, because it might be a little late in the day, but today through October 3rd, which is the day of the Bridge Walk, which will be 60 days. So we're asking Sangha to commit to doing five things every day that support their practice, five commitments for the next 60 days.
Aha. Uh-huh. So five commitments for the next 60 days, and that's the High Five Challenge.
And, yes.
Uh-huh. So when we were looking at this, right, Sridevi, I think the you mentioned that it's in the spirit of the training focus for the year, which is training to live in this year now, and the High Five Challenge, we arrived at the High Five Challenge because the training philosophy or the practice philosophy is living in Gassho.
Mm-hmm.
And high five is a different way of, it's a celebratory gesture of Gassho.
That was such a fun conversation when that all dropped in as we were all talking about this, of this idea of bringing our hands together in this celebratory way in just another level of Gassho, and these five fingers coming together with these other five fingers in celebration to celebrate just the practice and what happens when we make these commitments, you know, the type of joy, the compassion awareness we're able to tap into, and the ways that we can support ourselves to be present and to end suffering, and just the excitement and the celebration, that I know I experience when I keep my commitments and what I'm able to tap into as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. And that keeping commitments is the practice that we've been talking about a lot this year about training. And the real training that we're doing is to get here, which means to drop the conversation in conditioned mind. And every time we decide to keep a commitment, the campaign starts to talk us out of it. And the training process really that's part of this campaign is to go up against those voices and become trustworthy people who can keep the commitment no matter how we feel or no matter what the voices say.
Yeah. And what I really loved is, you know, I'll say initially when we were talking about it and there were five things, I went, five things every day? And then what was so wonderful, what happened within a split second, was I went, oh, my gosh, that's five things every day, five opportunities every day that I'm committing to be able to come back here, to drop that conversation. And I started feeling all this excitement. Like, I just couldn't wait to think about what my five things were going to be. You know, because they could be so many different things. They could be things that we're already doing. You know, so many people have a sitting practice, a recording and listening practice, you know, reading the tweets. But, you know, I was thinking for myself, like, looking up at the sky once a day and just saying thank you, you know, being able to drink, you know, six glasses of water a day or drink one more glass than I normally do. But there's so many different ways that we can think about those commitments, and to me, that's so exciting.
Uh-huh. So any five commitments, and they could be commitments daily, or we even talked about somebody who wants to finish a project that they haven't started. And they could take 60 days and commit to doing something towards the project every single day. And if they did that, it would be part of their high five commitment. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the same activity daily, but everybody could get creative in however they want to choose their commitments to fit the practice book.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there's so many different things. You know, I think one of that, like cleaning the basement, you know, one day it could be like going down and just making a list of what you want to do. The next thing it could be going through one box. The next day it could be sweeping the floor. You know, so many different elements that when you just break it down into very specific action items, at the end of the 60 days, you're going to be like, wait a second, my basement's already clean. That's awesome. You know, that's a wonderful product of just showing up every day, doing what you said, and seeing what the result ends up being over time.
Yes, and that's why it's the high five, which is training to live in Gassho, because it's not just that the content that we look at happens, right? We get healthier because we have a much, you know, we clean the basement or whatever else. We walk 10,000 steps and therefore get fit. But we really, really train in practice, train to keep the commitments, train to go up against the voices, train to live in this here now. And that's really the process is the outcome aspect of the campaign.
Yes, yes. And I think what's also really exciting to tell Sangha about is not only are we encouraging Sangha here to participate in this, but the team in Cantalomba is also making commitments themselves and participating in the campaign with us. And I believe the commitments they've chosen are kindness, speaking English, reading, attendance, and care. And they're actually going to be tracking their commitments on a chart. And I think there's a point system involved and all sorts of different things that they're also doing in participation of the campaign.
Oh, wow. So we're going to do it on both sides of the pond. Well, which is actually also, and I want to come back to that, Shirevi, but it's also that whole thing about Gassho, right, that my heart and your heart are one, is that state of presence where all opposites get reconciled. And so part of doing this training, keeping commitments from that attitude of mind that keeping my commitments, you could attach a fundraiser to it and we'll come to that, but somehow keeping my commitments during the bridge walk season is assisting all of those people, all of those children that we're feeding. And so every day. And so, in other words, I keep the commitment not only to become much more present for myself to end suffering, but to also do it for the love of others, right? That I keep the commitment because a child would get fed if I do, because we as collectively as a Sangha are going towards a goal in this Bridge Walk campaign. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we have, as many people may know, this year reached a really incredible milestone of feeding 1,000 children. And for the last 10, and I believe 10 years ago, in 2005, was when the program started. And so 10 years times 1,000 children, our goal is to keep 10,000 commitments. So if you keep your commitment every day, you know, 5 commitments a day for the next 60 days, that's 300 commitments that you will have kept over the 60 days. And so we're actually going to have, it's not quite live yet, but will be soon, a page where you can go in and enter how many commitments you've kept. You can do it daily, you can do it weekly, you can do it biweekly, monthly, and we're going to be tracking, and our goal as a Sangha is to have completed 10,000 commitments to ourselves, or collectively, by the day of the Bridge Walk.
And if people find it fun, just like we did last year of walking the 10,000 steps and doing a fundraising goal around it, that's an invitation for those people who are motivated by that to try to attach some kind of goal to the number of commitments they keep. I've decided that I'm going to have someone sponsor me for $1 per commitment. Actually, 2 people sponsor me for $1 per commitment I keep over the next 60 days.
Wow, that's great. That's so great.
Yeah.
It's so fun. Yeah. And then one other thing I want to encourage people to do as they're thinking about their commitments, and of course in this practice, they watch what comes up and watch what happens. We would love for people to tell us, you know, what they're committing to, why they're choosing to train, why they want to be living in this here now. And so we encourage people to email Bridgewalk campaign at livingcompassion.org. It's also on the website, and I'll give that address in a second. And tell us why you're training to live in this year nine, why you're choosing to make these commitments. And those will go up on an inspiration page similar to last year of why when people committed to walking and they were telling us why they were walking. So, you know, in the spirit of Sangha, we can all just continue to inspire each other and support each other through the Bridgewalk campaign. And that URL for the entire High Five Challenge is if you go to livingcompassion.org/Africa, and then you go to the Get Involved, you'll just see a drop-down menu that says High Five Challenge, and go ahead and click on that. And there's so much wonderful detail. It's been laid out so wonderfully about all of the components of the challenge, the practice, what we're asking, how you can participate, and it's just so exciting, and I really, really hope everyone goes home this evening, you know, or the next tomorrow morning and starts writing down what they want to do.
Uh-huh. So it's also available, I believe, from the What's New page on the website, so you could go directly to the campaign page. So as we're running up against 5 o'clock, Sridev, I'm going to take a minute to wrap up, right? So we're officially in the 14th annual Bridgewalk fundraising campaign training season. The theme is the High Five Challenge, Living in Gesho. Everybody's invited to do a 60-day campaign for themselves, 5 commitments per day that they want to keep for 60 days. We're going for 10,000 commitments as a Sangha. For the 1,000 children we've actually are feeding, and for the 10 years that we've been feeding them, I believe our fundraising goal for the Bridgewalk season is $108,000 because it costs about $9 per kid to at the current exchange rate, and so that's what we've put out there for ourselves. And all of the details of the campaign, how to track it, how to participate, how to stay inspired and in touch is all on the website, which can be accessed from the What's New page. And I do think, Sridevi, we do have also newsletters coming out every week, right, with stories from
yes.
Sangha who are training this way as the last
yes.
item to keep us engaged.
Yes, yes, those will start, I believe, early next week. So stay tuned to your email inboxes. They're going to be great.
Good. And I think we ran into some technical challenges around the tracking of the commitments, but to also look out for that email, which would say that's live, and both the registration for the Bridgewalk and the ability to track our commitments will be sent out in a separate note. It's not live today.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much, Sridevi. Thank you for stewarding the program and for managing all the details. And I bet we'll be on together soon to talk about all of the wonderful things happening in the campaign over the next 60 days.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I'm so excited. And I got my 5 commitments, so I'm starting today.
Me too. We had the advantage of the head start, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Thank you, Sridevi. Take care and deep gesho.
Deep gesho. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Handing this show over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, Sridevi. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow, that was fun, Sherry.
I'm excited. How about you?
Yes, great.
Oh, I'll tell you, I knew about it in advance, too, and so I today was actually my first day. I laid it all out yesterday, but today was my first day. And I think we share this love of stickers. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah.
Stickers that go on calendars. And so yep. I've got my calendar all out. So I just started an email class, as you know, and those are always a little bit challenging for me, just in the sense that it takes so many hours out of the day, you know, to write the responses. Yeah. And so it often I need to make kind of that sort of commitment just to make sure everything gets into the day. And so this time I decided to do it kind of like Sridevi and Ashwini mentioned there with the basement, you know, that I'm going to get up every day and decide what I'm going to be able to do today, because all days are not the same. And so I have my whole list of practices, and then which of them am I committing to specifically on this day? Then at the end of the day, I write them on my calendar that I did, put my little check mark to my stickers, and I'm so excited I can hardly stand myself.
That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. Do you have your five or maybe even more than five commitments?
Yes. Yes. I actually have many more than five. But during this particular, I mean, there are times when, so I've never stopped walking since that started, I guess it was last year. And still charted, and it's going to be part of my fundraiser for this year as well. But then to make sure that I, you know, stay in integrity with this particular campaign, I want to do that thing of deciding every day which are the ones that I'm going to do today. Because if it weren't for the campaign, there would actually be some days when, you know, I might get the two things in that I'm absolutely committed to. You know, I may sit and walk, and that's it, because that's all I have time for, because I'm on a plane or something, you know. But during the next 60 days, then I'm going to make sure I get my five in. And that, I just like that planning and looking at the day and what's it going to be like, and how am I going to reward myself, which is what this is to me, is how am I going to reward myself? What am I going to give to myself? And practice is what I give to myself. That's the thing that brings joy to my life. And so I'm excited.
Great. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds really fun. Sounds really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of tension and structure really helps to keep me centered and less available for conditioning distractions when I make that commitment of the five things I'm going to do.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It there's just something about takes the waffle factor out of it. This is what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
And the point that the gals made, you know, that the extra added with this is, this is not just for me, this is not just for my practice, this is our friends way over there on the other side of the world. You know, we're doing this with them. And by golly, if they can commit to speaking English and reading and doing all of those things, and kindness and care, oh my gosh, that just, talk about heart opening. If they're going to commit to those things, I'm sure going to do my part over here and commit to the things that I'm committing to. So, solidarity.
Yeah. Super supportive. Yeah, to have the team over there. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I have some announcements here.
All right.
So, on the evening of Thursday, August 20th, you will be part of an engaging and insightful conversation in Sebastopol, California.
That's right. I'm excited about that, too.
Oh, I'm excited about that, too.
Are you going to go?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Michael. That's wonderful.
I had a chance to see you in person. Cannot be missed. A great privilege. And the details will be posted soon on the Living Compassion website. And about 10 days later, on August 30th, Sherry, you and Ashwini will lead a workshop in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
That's right.
And this workshop will explore the power of practice in our lives.
Yeah.
And
which is what we're talking about, right? That's what we're talking about right here. The power of practice. Life-changing.
It's what we're always talking about.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Well,
yes.
That's good.
Yes. And don't miss the final In This Way, I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself retreat. And the last one will be in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which again focuses on the importance of training and spiritual practice. And that's from August 31st until September 4th.
I can't believe there's still openings in that. That's amazing. All right.
That's amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
And since we're
good.
Now, this month.
Yeah, I hope somebody jumps on that. Good, good.
Yes. And for these and all other practice opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry tonight, press *6 and then 1. That's a way to make a show. And the usual reminder of one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So here we go.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Sherry.
Hello.
This is Sun Ho calling from now Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Well, hello. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's nice to be able to call. I kind of fell out of, well, not entirely, but the past.
You've been busy.
I've kind of been in a big transition for the past 2 months, and it's nice to be able to call today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Life gets busy. We're traveling around. Lots going on, and it's good to just stop and check in.
Yeah, I've been traveling around, and also I moved from the sunny west coast to the east coast. So it's been 3 days since I've officially moved here. Yeah, so a lot.
That's not as good for us, Sun-Ho.
Well,
that you're making a good decision here?
That's actually what I wanted to talk to you about today. I plan on going back, actually. I'm thinking about doing the New Year's retreat and flying out of the East Coast for December, since it'll be very snowy here, which So I'm having like a big block of karma come up, and I was wondering if I could give this a go.
Please, let's talk about it.
All right. Well, okay. So I'll try to make it as brief as possible. When I was in college, I was doing a major in law, and I thought I was going to go to law school. And it turned out that, you know, and I, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm a hard worker, and I have, you know, good, like, I'm good at making commitments with myself and keeping them if I really want to. And so I did really well, and I graduated top of my class, and everybody thought I was going to be some sort of lawyer that's, like, very powerful and
superstar lawyer.
And, you know, my parents really wanted to push for the legal career, and I just could not see myself sitting in the desk and working 90 hours trying to fight with other people. Like, that just seemed like a terrible idea. And I thought about doing, like, you know, legal scholarship, and it seemed interesting, but not something that, like, really sparked in me, and I just decided, okay, I don't want to live my life like that. So I spent the next, like, 1 or 2 years, and I was kind of pretty much lost in conditioned mind for a good part of it, and that's when I found the monastery, and I was in a relationship that I didn't really want to be in, and all of a sudden, I had spent 3 years, and there was, like, this push for, like, oh, you should study the LSAT. Oh, didn't want to do it. Go apply to law school, like, didn't want to do it. And then I really got interested in, because before I was at Zen, I was a big yoga person. So I'd always been interested in dance and yoga and contortion and that kind of body-related things. And I thought, okay. And somebody had kind of given me a job working in the fitness world. And I just really found myself enjoying working with clients and getting knowledge about the body. And I decided, okay, I actually really want to be, maybe think about medicine. And then I found an internship working in San Francisco with a doctor, and then I realized, okay, really, actually really like this. You know, it turned out to be like a really good fit where, you know, he was his approach was very integrative and worked very well with Zen and my philosophies about life. So I felt really excited, and then applied for some post-bac programs. And what the interesting thing about that is that I so I got into a post-bac program, which so because I didn't do medicine in my undergrad, I would have to do like a post-baccalaureate program, which generally ends up about being 2 years before I go into medical school. And I'd already been accepted to the one that I'm currently going to be attending now. And but then I, for whatever reason, decided to defer for one more year because I decided, okay, well, I got into this one, but I want to give myself to the option of going to other ones. But then even when I did get into other ones, I decided to go to this one. And I don't even know what that was about. So now I'm here, and I was feeling very excited about it, and I made this huge move, and you know, gave up a nice rent control apartment in Berkeley, and told everybody I was leaving, and now I'm here. And then all of a sudden, like, these thoughts flood in. It's like, okay, and also, like, not to mention, like, I just turned 25, which I know is not that old, but that doesn't keep conditioned mind from being like, okay, that's really too old. And plus, I come from a culture where, you know, like, when I went to visit my family, like, so when are you?
You should
have
be married.
Or, yeah, right. Yeah. I was like, why don't? What do you mean you don't have a boyfriend? Like, you know, that kind of stuff. And then I, of course, those kinds of thoughts started getting to me. I was like, okay, well, actually, I am getting older, and I, you know, as a woman, like, I do want to think about like having a family at some point. And medical school is like 10 years plus, you know, depending on what kind of specialty you want to go into. Like financially, I won't start making money until like 7 years, which, you know, pretty much puts me on loans or parental support, which is kind of is an iffy place. And then so I'm I was prepared for all of that, and I thought, okay, but I still got to do what I want to do. And now, like, what I'm getting hit with is like, is this really what you want to do? And this whole kind of conversation is coming up, and I'm like, okay, like, and also like, growing up, I've always been more, not that I was ever bad at math and science, but I was always more verbally talented. Like, English wasn't my first language, but for whatever reason, I excelled in English. Like, I didn't, you know, I barely needed ESL. And so, like, the verbal skills I know are pretty developed in me, whereas, you know, I haven't really done math and science for a long time. Not to say that I wasn't good at them, because I'd always been a good student. And now it's like, you know, like, what I'm hearing in my head is, like, okay, well, can I actually really do this? Like, is this actually what you really want? Like, wouldn't it be easier to just, like, go to law school and, you know, have a 3-year education and just do something that's kind of, like, health-related in law? Or
I know the answer, Sung-ho.
Oh, you do? God, what a relief.
Well, it may not be the answer, but I could suggest a place to look. Because,
okay,
you know, what it sounds like is that conditioning has been having its way with you for some time now. You know, you do something, and then it, and you kind of go off in another direction, and then, you know, so you're postponing things and postponing things, and, you know, so it's always second-guessing you.
That's actually what I was just about to say, with that, like, my real problem is that it's not, like, what I'm going to do. Like, somebody once told me when I was, like, 16, was like, oh, you'll probably be good at whatever you decide to choose to do, because, like, observing my personality and how I work, that's kind of what he told me, and I just thought that was kind of very true. Like, if I put my mind to it, I always excelled in whatever it is that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So my point was, I have a hard time committing to it. And it was, like, the same thing with contortion. Like, I really didn't make it a lot of progress until, like, I decided, okay, I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden I made 2 years' worth of progress in, like, 3 months. But for 2 years I didn't go anywhere because I couldn't commit to it. And now, like, it's kind of the thing that I said to myself. Was like, okay, just try it for 6 months. Like, just this semester, just do it. If it's not, you know, if it's really that, you know, like, if I really just don't want to do chemistry, you know, if it's, like, hell for me, then mm-hmm. I can always take the LSATs and just go to law school. You know, it won't be a big deal. But then, yeah. of course, like conditioning is coming in and saying, yeah, but like, why are you, if you're going to do that, like, why don't you just do it now? You're not getting any old, you know, okay. younger. And
so, here's the deal. Yeah. Here's the deal with that. Okay. That's exactly, not surprisingly, what I was going to suggest. But for me, there's one other, the most critical element is that you decide to do that and you stop entertaining those voices.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, that's where the real lesson is, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you go to medical school or law school or have kids or a boyfriend or whatever, the mm-hmm. thing that has to happen is ceasing to be in that hateful relationship with conditioned voices. Because
mm-hmm.
they, whatever you do for your whole life, unless you end that relationship, they're going to make you miserable. You'll decide not to have kids, and they'll make your life hell because of that. You'll decide to have kids, and they'll make your life hell because of that.
Yeah.
So that's right, just to say, I'm going to do this for 6 months, and I'm not listening to another word about it. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's what I thought that, you know, I should do, is that I should at least, because it's like one of those things, it's like, okay, if I don't at least, if I try the medical thing with all my heart, and I chose at the end of the day not to do it, mm-hmm. then I know that, then I'm not going to, question myself when my legal career gets hard. I'm not going to be like, well, you should have gone to medical school, really, like, you know, you shouldn't, why'd you give up on that? So mm-hmm. that seems like the right choice to me, and it's like, do you have any tips for like sitting down and starting to do like these prep, and of course like the voices are really loud and like, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, and
well, here's the thing, and this is true for every single person who's listening to this. Okay, this really is true. They will do it for as long as you let them.
Mm-hmm.
People believe at a really deep level that I can't stop it. You know, I've tried to stop them, but they just mm-hmm. keep on,
mm-hmm.
no. As soon as you make up your mind that you are not going, now, is there a training time? Sure. Okay, you listen to the voices and you say no,
right.
and you turn your attention to what,
yeah.
okay, they come up again, you say no. The mm-hmm. thing about it is, it's in psychology, I think this is a principle, but random reinforcement is the most powerful reinforcement. So you can say, so somebody wants to date you, right, and you're not that interested. And he asks three times, and you say no, and then on the fourth time, you say yes.
Mm.
Okay. Then he asks six times, and you say no, and then you give in and say yes. The guy is never going to give up. Okay, because if he stays at it long enough, you're going to give in. And the voices mm-hmm. are operating on exactly the same principle. So mm-hmm. we must get to the point of never giving in, mm-hmm. no matter how tired you are, no matter how hungry you are, no matter anything, mm-hmm. you do not give in. And when that's the case, it'll turn around for you.
That makes a lot of sense. And just one other thing, one last thing is, so I also wonder if, like, there is something else that I actually really, I mean, I think there, like I said, like, there, the truth is like, whatever, if I just commit to it, then I can, you know, as long as I'm not in the voices, I can be happy doing what I'm doing, whatever that is. But I also mm-hmm. wonder, like, if there's something else that I actually really want to do that I'm not really being given permission to do, because, like, I mean, it's no stranger to me is the fact that, you know, I come from a culture that really, really stresses one particular thing and doesn't account for any other possibilities in a person's life. You know, and you're either going to be a lawyer, you're going to be a doctor, or you're either going to be, like, really successful and make a lot of money. Like, it's anything else is, like, not really an option. And,
Well, here's the deal. when you master those voices, there will be an opening for you to know the answer to that.
Okay.
But until then, I don't think there is. Because the conditioning is too strong and you're too conditioned to go with the conditioning.
Okay.
But you get the other side of those voices, and then you're, what that opens up for us, of course, is freedom, right? So now you really are free to make your own choices. You're not going to have to listen to all of that stuff, and it doesn't matter whether the stuff comes from parents or peers or whatever. It won't land anywhere because it's not happening inside your head.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Thank you. That's really helpful. I'm
good.
Definitely planning on coming to the New Year's retreat now. So
good. Good. Yeah, good. Well, take care of yourself and
I will.
Keep in touch, huh?
I will, definitely. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sung Ho. I can relate to all of that, Sherry, definitely.
Oh, my goodness gracious, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to take a break and hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
This year's theme is training to live in this year now. In any training, having a personal trainer helps tremendously. We can think of Zen Awareness coaches as personal trainers. The coaches have been trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching with any number of life issues or awareness practice in general, with special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to Living Compassion, having a coach also supports practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, visit sanghamarket.com. Go to Services, under All Categories. Click on the little monk at the bottom, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. It's Jeff in North Carolina.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Jeff.
Hello.
How are you doing?
How am I doing?
It's kind of a trick question, isn't it, sometimes? Or loaded or something. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question. I physically, it's been a challenging summer. For whatever reasons, just more challenging during this summer than it had been during the school year, and so, you know, doing I guess a lot of good practice with that.
Oh, Jeff, I can't tell if you're breaking up or just paused in your what you were saying. Oh dear,
Jeff, are you there? Oh, I think we just lost him.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe the next caller and you can find him again, huh?
Yes. Yes. That sounds perfect. Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael. It's Jen in Rhinebeck, New York.
Well, hello, Jen.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing really well. Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, I'm excited to have the high five idea because
isn't that good?
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And I think it'll help motivate me because I think what tends to happen is I make so many commitments and then they're all kind of scattered a little bit. And then I forget I have a commitment until I hear it on a recording or I come across a little scrap of paper that I made somewhere or something. So I have this idea to, like, make a poster or something of these five and, you know, do the whole tracking and keep them front and center.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
I was listening to somebody recently who said, who offered the suggestion to write this kind of thing down on 4 3-by-5 cards.
Mm-hmm.
And then place them in prominent locations.
Yeah.
You know, get multiple copies. So
yeah.
Because we do tend to stop seeing something pretty quickly. Conditioning sort of just blocks it out or glances right over it or whatever. So, yeah, that's funny. It's like one of the commitments could be not forget that I have
the
commitments.
<That's right.
laughs> I commit to remembering my commitments every day.
I like that idea of having it just, I only have 3 rooms in my house, so I could put, you know, put a
and
little
one in the car.
Thing and one in the car. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Well, I wanted to ask about the email class that's going on and
mm-hmm.
My experience of the first session. And it was sort of this, I sort of get this message from conditioning that's like this pseudo-Zen kind of message that it's like, oh, you know, it's just not for you, you know, whatever the content might be. It's like it's just kind of like, oh, it's not for you. You're not getting that in this incarnation. Maybe next time around, you know, it sounds like it's being, yeah, I'm with there. It's really tough, you know. You know, it sounds like it's being my buddy and kind of commiserating with me. But your response was to, be careful that there's not kind of something lurking in there that I'm not seeing, I think. And I just wanted to sort of tease that out a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's good because I know I've made similar comments on a few occasions where it's obvious that the person, say you, have a really deep and solid practice.
Yeah.
And one of the things that there are several things that I get concerned about after we've been doing them for a while. I don't anticipate where karmic conditioning is going to take them.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the one that's most up currently is subpersonalities. You know, it never occurred to me that karmic conditioning would do with that tool what it's done. You know, it's so karmic conditioning just masquerades as a little child and then takes over a person's life and basically paralyzes them or cripples them.
Mm-hmm.
The next one up is the mentor, you know, where we have people now saying, oh, yeah, and the mentor said, anything I want to do is just fine.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I'm sorry, kids, that's not the mentor.
Yes.
Sounds like it, yes, absolutely. And, of course, we're eager to listen to a wise person who says, oh, yeah, sure, whatever you feel like. Just, whatever you feel like, you're just perfect the way you are. So then we have to caution there. And the redirecting the attention is, I think we're going to get into a similar place where people learn how to do that, and it does work. I mean, there's no question about it. We can redirect our attention, but we also want the clarity of what's going on. And it takes me back to that Ram Dass thing about dropping acid. You know, can you get to amazing places on drugs? Absolutely. But you don't know where you are, or how you got there, or how to get back. And most of all, you can't be of assistance to anybody else.
Right.
Right? Because you don't know where they are or how to get them back. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that same way, you know, there's something going on with me. Sure, I can redirect my attention and not have that experience. But I haven't actually, it's kind of like not balancing one's checkbook.
Yes, I don't do that. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's
and,
a good one.
You know, most of the time, you know, we can get away with it.
Yes.
And then we get that sinking feeling of, but I really don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it and conditioning can start playing on a sense of vulnerability, because what if something comes up and I can't direct my attention away from it?
Mm-hmm.
Then where am I?
Mm-hmm. Or
I
think what happens.
What you're looking at.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. This is the piece of it that I think you were suggesting to me in your response. That it's like just turning the attention away is sort of only part of the equation, because there could be. You didn't say it this way, but I read it as, you know, there could be sort of a layer of denial in there. It's like, or fear.
Yes.
I mean, maybe it's fear, you know, which is the next part of the class, right? And so it's like, oh, no, no. Okay, I'm just not going to look at that. I'm going to redirect my attention over here. Like, you know, that's a good thing to do. Get out of that conversation.
Whistling in the dark.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm fine. And and the way you say that, it's obvious that what we're concerned about is egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate just slides over and moves in there.
Right.
You know, okay, well, here's a good place to hang out, because she's not going to look at it because she knows how to turn her attention away. So we'll just set up shop here.
Right. And it'll, you know, give those that sort of pseudo-zen thing. Like, yeah, it's hard to, but, you know, you're responsible with your money. Like, you're a good saver. You know, you have no debt. That, you know, like, it points out all the good things, and then I don't feel like I have to address it. There's no problem. You know, conditioning is the one making a problem. There's no problem. I don't have to look at anything. And it feels all, you know, legitimate, I guess.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So, as you know, as I mentioned to people some regularly, this year-long retreat that we're doing, that's what people are finding in that.
Mm-hmm.
That it's putting the finger directly on the places that we've been able to say, that's not a problem. No, I'm fine with that. In fact, in this class, it's interesting, the number of people who have said that they watch conditioning just go, oh, no, I don't have any issues with that.
Right.
Or you know, that's not a problem for you. And then they, you know, stop and take a couple of breaths and go, what, are you crazy? You know, I'm tortured by these two subjects of sex and money. I'm tortured. What do you mean there are no issues there? But it's easy because we want to believe it, right? I want to believe I don't have any problems. If that voice in my head says, oh, well, that's not an area of difficulty for you. Oh, thank God.
Right.
You know, one down. All right.
Exactly. I've been working hard at this for years. I might as well have something that I don't have a problem with.
Exactly. And then that's the place where we go, I think I'm being conned here.
I think
I'm getting set up. Because, you know, it speaks to a really interesting, very difficult for me anyway, to articulate place, which is, do I want to be free?
Yeah.
Or do I want to be okay?
Yeah.
And those are two very different ambitions.
Yeah.
Right? If I want to be free, and then if I add, and I'd like to be of assistance, then I don't want there to be anything I haven't faced.
Yeah.
But if I just want to be okay, I just want, you know, I'd like to suffer less. I don't want to, then I get to a place where I feel good and got pretty comfortable and I'm just going to hang out here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if I do want to be free and if I want to be of assistance, then it really is, okay, next.
Yeah.
You know, you're just out there turning those rocks over. Just turn them over.
I love that.
No surprises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that, because one of the favorite things of mine that you've said is, do I want to be right or do I want to be free? And I've been working with that on for a good while now, and just seeing like the minutiae, the little tiny ways which I feel threatened when I'm not right, you know. And I'm not, maybe not even be wrong, you know. I'm in the writing and editing field. People may be editing my work, and, you know, that response of like, okay, and so I'll stand there at my computer and literally be like, okay, do I need to be right or do I want to be free?
Yes.
So I love that idea of in this case too. It's like, okay, do I want to be just okay or do I want to be free? Well, I want to be free.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that little move to me can take us from identified basically with ego.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I hope nobody hurts me. Oh, God, I hope nothing happens to me. To, all right, this is great.
Yeah.
I'm on it.
Yeah.
Like now I'm Sherlock Holmes. And
yeah.
I am on the case.
Mm-hmm.
The switch from being the prey to being the hunter
mm-hmm.
just changes everything for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but the thing we have to do in that first, oh God, I hope nothing happens to me. It really is all about me.
Yeah.
I'm focused on me. Ego
yeah.
is focused on me. In the mm-hmm. other, it is a completely disidentified place. You know, nothing can happen to me. I'm on the trail of this stuff,
yeah.
and I'm gonna track it down and rip its disguise off and reveal it for what it is. This
mm-hmm.
is fun. This is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What
you
were reading?
Oh, I was going to say I read something recently. Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote the E.K. Love book, it was an interview of hers, and she was talking about her grandmother, who at 91 was diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, her whole approach to life was about curiosity. So she came home from her first doctor's appointment and, you know, said, it's so interesting. I meet the most interesting doctors. I have the most interesting conversations. Like, that was her approach to having cancer. It was just how interesting
uh-huh.
it all was, how fascinating. Sort of like, yeah, I'd like to be like that when I'm now, but and when I'm 91,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Yeah, now and between now and 91.
And between then, yes, yeah. Yeah, and I think, too, there's, like, I'm also noticing in this that there's, you know, sex and money are not two of the topics that conditioning had previously identified as real issues for me. You know, let's talk about food and career instead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like it's not even sexy enough for conditioning to deal with. You know, it's just not even interesting. Like, you know, there's these other stories that have so much fuel behind them.
Juice.
Exactly. And so that's another way it's kind of, oh, you know, there's not really any problem with these, and, you know. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Because these other things are big, and you really need
yeah.
to spend your time on those, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's good.
And
I
then,
feel like things are being exposed left and right.
Yeah, and before you go, the curiosity that just arose in me is, what is the relationship between those two subjects? So career and sex and money, food and sex and money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we can suspect. I was trying to articulate something today, or trying to write it. I don't know where it went. But I asked the person to call into open air if in case it didn't make any sense at all. But I'm looking at this thing that I look at often, actually, and that is how connected everything is specifically. Not in general, we live in an interconnected universe. Everything is one.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. But how specifically it's connected and how those connections literally hold us in place. Almost, if you could see each one of them, kind of a Gulliver's Travels sort of a thing, where, you know, the guy woke up and he was pinned down
yeah.
with all of these strings. And so if you imagine we're standing up and we're walking around and those strings are going out in every direction to... So the example I gave was, I look up and there's a woman, and everything about me gets run past. It's like there's a filament, a line between every perception of her and everything about me. And the comparisons, the judgments, the opinions, the conditioning, the karma,
yeah.
the, you know, the color of what she's wearing,
yeah.
the shape of her body,
yeah.
everything. Gets,
yeah.
Now, then compound that with the 10,000, 100,000 things that fall into my line of sight, sound, taste, mm-hmm. touch, smell, okay, in a given moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of that is holding me together.
In place, yeah. Uh-huh.
In place.
Yeah.
And only egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate could try to convince us that one thing has nothing to do with another.
Mm-hmm.
These are
yep.
separate subjects. Or
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's just too out there, but...
Well, no, I mean, it makes sense because it's the same idea, of everything being interconnected as if it were a web and you pull one strand, the whole thing could unravel.
Yes.
So, you know, it doesn't actually want you to think they're connected because, you know, then you actually have a real chance at unraveling it all.
Yes, yes, yeah. yes. Or at least seeing the importance of being present.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah. Because then when we're present, we can have a sense of that. And having a sense of that is so much more powerful than going with one of those strands. Mm-hmm. One of those strands and believing that that's the important thing that
right.
that exists right now.
Mm-hmm. I have the same feeling right now as when I do process mapping, and I sort of just you go off into the circle of on the process map, and you're like actually nowhere near what's really going on. You're just off in the circle somewhere. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh huh. All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you.
Take good care.
I'll see you in a few weeks.
Oh, that's right. See you
yes.
in a few weeks.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. That was a fun conversation. And Sherry, we have Jeff back here. I see him in the queue.
Oh,
here.
Good.
Okay, Jeff, are you back?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Michael.
Sure.
All Hello, right. Sherry.
Hey. So this summer, a little more challenging than the school year.
Yes. You know, and I was, it's kind of perhaps serendipitous that happened, dropped, and then I got to hear your discussion with the last caller, which disidentified me. The thing especially that I got in there was that whole, that conversation about, and I won't remember the words right now, but my version of it is, just saying to life, you know, whatever it takes. Don't make me comfortable. I've said that, kind of as a prayer. At various times, and I get into, oh, but this is rough, you know, and the fear and. I really don't want it to be this way, and, you know, can't it be different, and all
yeah.
that kind of thing. And, I'm just practicing accepting what is and accepting
mm-hmm.
knowing the future and, you know, whether I'm going to be able to do my job or, whether I'm, right now it's the summer, so, I'll be back in a couple weeks. Just what's going to happen. I mean, because the symptoms have fluctuated so incredibly, all the time, it's all over the place. Something comes and goes and another thing, there's just been, really so much practice I get to a place of acceptance, you know, around something or and letting go of the fear around something, and then something else happens.
Yes.
Or something else comes back that had gotten better. I don't know what more to say about it at the moment.
Well, you know, it's so, so we know intellectually that every moment the entire universe is brand new. Intellectually, we know that. But emotionally, we don't know that at all. We don't know that, and we don't want to know that, right? So, we deny what is obvious to us in the face of undeniable evidence, right? We all know that we're getting older, that our bodies are changing, that and yet, conditioning would have us live as if nothing has changed. It's always going to be the way it is. It's always going to be fine. Okay. And so what you're describing makes it absolutely impossible to do that. Right? Because moment by moment by moment, as you say, you know, so you have this symptom, and you're dealing with that, coming to terms with that, and about the time you come to terms with that, something else pops up over here. Something comes back that had gone away, something that you hadn't, you can't even figure out what it is. And so it's, there's never a chance for the system to get comfortable and go unconscious. Right? And egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, takes that really hard. On the one hand, it's good for that system because there's so much potential for suffering. On the other hand, it's bad news for it because you are kept alert. You're watching what's going on. Yeah. So it is a really amazing place to practice. And as you say, you know, we may say, I really want to practice. I really, not with this, not like that. That's not what I had in mind when I said that prayer. Right? Yeah. Yeah, because if you could get to a place of all I want to do is see how everything works, then, boy, do you have a front row seat. But every time you encounter, but I'm scared, you know, what if this means I'm dying? I don't want to die. I don't want to not be able to work. I don't want to become crippled. I don't want to be in pain for the rest of my life. I don't want that. And then, of course, the suffering is intense. So we can kind of see the movement between there's a me that this is happening to and that disidentified, God, this is fascinating, place of the 91-year-old with cancer.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's just a really, I think I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it, you know, make some kind of sign or, you know, and mantra recordings, whatever about that whole idea. But that whole, you know, of it all being, you know, fascinating and interesting and, you know, because the key, I think, is just that, being interested in the moment. And I've come to this, you know, and then forgotten it. but that place of, you know, not being a me with a past and a future, you know.
Yes.
That my only life, the only life that I have is now, in this moment. And because if I'm a person with a story, what happens is there gets to be hope because something gets a little better or, you know, I get this new practitioner or this new possibility or, you know, this particular thing is going well. It's not just, you know, I'm sleeping well or it's not as symptomatic today or whatever. And that, you know, unconsciously, I was going to say the temptation, but even it's not even a temptation most of the time because I don't even question it. I just I'm gone into hope. But hope,
yes,
in this case, is just the opposite. It's the other side of the coin of fear. And there's no way to have one without the other. Because hope, I mean, in at least in looking at it in this way, is a story about the future.
Yes.
And
yes.
So, so, you know, just, you know, again, like you're talking about, the front row seat, or the 91-year-old woman who gets to talk to the interesting doctors and whatever, you know, that's my opportunity, you know, to live,
yes,
live now and not have a story.
To live now and to be a this. To be a this instead of a me.
Mm. Can you say more about that?
Well, because now there is this.
Mm.
As soon as you say, there's ownership, there's a me. Now, and I mean, that was perfect. You're right. That hope and fear are just the two opposites that ego uses to take us out into the future. So you hope, you feel good, it's dashed, you're afraid. Then you get hopeful, then that's dashed again, and you're afraid. So, but it's always out there focused on the future, maintaining that illusion of an ego. But when we are here, when we are a this now, then that's where freedom is. That's where peace is. And that's where joy is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's the comparing what my experience is, right, the little quote marks, what my experience is to what I wish my experience were.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's the suffering. I've become a me who is not in this experience, but wanting a different experience than this experience. There is no way not to suffer. I don't care what's going on. There is no way not to suffer under those circumstances. May not be in this moment, but it's going to be in the next moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, you know, what a couple of things. One is, you know, it occurs to me, it's like being a dog or whatever, anything else but a human. Just
yes.
We assume being fully one with life, not, again, not having a story about a past or and a future, just being fully engaged with this moment, whatever this moment is, not having any idea that it could be different.
Yes.
Basically not being in conditioned mind. And, you know, and so what I hear in being a this rather than being a me is being awareness or
yes.
Just being present.
Yes.
Yes. Just experiencing.
Yes.
And another thing about that for me is giving up any idea that I have any control about where anything is going. But even in that, there's no going. You know, there's no go in the just being here, absolutely here right now, there's no going anywhere. It's just,
yes,
you know, there's just this moment. There's nothing else.
That's right. So when you were saying that, I had an image of just being a mirror. So there you are as awareness aware of life, awareness aware of whatever is reflected in this moment.
Mm. Oh,
which
wow.
is a joyful, which is a joyful experience.
Mm. Wow. It's like being a nobody, but being an everything, but a nobody, kind
yes.
of.
yes. yes, being an everything nobody. There's an ambition. Yeah, yeah. And you know, to me, the experience of that is gratitude. Because what we lose sight of when we become a me is how miraculous it is to be alive.
Now, that sounds crazy to say that, but everybody who is honest and looks knows that it's true. As soon as I become a me, this is the way it is. It's the way it's always going to be. It's the way it always has been, and it better continue to be this way, or I've got a big gripe. But for a this, for just an awareness of life, there is only gratitude.
Because you're really there. You're really experiencing it. And everything is new and absolutely miraculous and wondrous,
right.
And you know, and don't know, and you know, just curiosity and all of that. Whereas the other place, it's you're not experiencing life. You're experiencing that kind of it's not even awareness is not even outside of the skull. It's
that's
like
right.
It's all swallowed up into this false
me.
Yeah.
Into me.
And
I'm just
all these
busy
ideas.
Being me. Yes.
Yeah.
Everything is there to reflect me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. It's not only a story, but it's a story about me. Yeah, right. Wow.
And
great.
it's always an unhappy story with an unhappy ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason, of course, that we get trapped by it is that we don't realize we're identified with ego. And ego only cares about being me. Not about happiness, not about goodness, not about gratitude, not about anything. Just about being me. Having my story about me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Mr. Mirror. Take good care of yourself, huh?
Thank you, Sherry, very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. Good night.
Bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. Sherry, that last conversation brought the whole show together for me. Because at the beginning, we were talking about the Africa Vulnerable Children Project, which for me is so much more fascinating and compelling than my little life. And then you and Jeff just had that fabulous conversation about dropping that little boring me for something bigger.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. Oh, that's very good, isn't it? Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you.
I thank you as always, sir. Good
and
night.
Thank you.
Take good care of yourself, huh?
Okay, you too. Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.